Our next case this morning is number 053361, the United States against LeGrue. Mr. Coulson.
May it please the court. My name is Bill Coulson. I represent LeGrue Distribution in this case. I think the main remaining issue in this case, it goes to the very heart of our criminal justice system, and I believe it has a constitutional dimension, and that is, what are the standards, if any, required for a felony conviction under the Food and Drug Acts? The government's theory, as we stated in our brief, was one bad hamburger in a 500,000-foot warehouse, 7-foot warehouse, is enough, and that trying on the part of the defendant is not a defense. It is conceded at trial by both sides that there are no objective standards for a rat infestation, which would put someone on notice that they're risking a felony. Indeed, the civil standard, according to Vella Holmes, is even more fluid. One rat, 10 rats, it depends. It's not disputed that there was no prior notice to this defendant. The defendant had passed every third-party inspection of the warehouse over the preceding 9 years, never got an NR for a rat infestation. The case involves a very vague definition of adulteration. It includes food that is unhealthy, unsound, unwholesome. And as the government said in its argument, it's impossible to actually know if the food was actually adulterated, but it may have been or it could have been. And the confluence of all these vague factors, it seems to me, produces a deeply flawed result. And all we're asking from this court is what we're entitled to under Staples and under Arthur Anderson, and that is some fair warning and the existence of some certain line before we can be convicted of a felony. I'm not talking about civil or administrative action. I'm not talking even about a misdemeanor. Those would raise different issues, but this is a felony, and that's what Staples and Arthur Anderson talks about. This, based on what I've said, this was indeed a strict liability prosecution, I submit. And the government can dress it up, and they can put lipstick on it. It's still a strict liability prosecution. If this prosecution passes this court's muster, then I submit that every warehouse, every restaurant, every convenience store in this district are doubtless felons. One bad hamburger is all it takes. No prior notice. All it takes. If you were to affirm these convictions, I think I would sure hope that the USDA never comes to my house to inspect my kitchen, because I'm sure they would find at least one bad hamburger in my refrigerator, especially when my wife's out of town.
You can rest easy. They don't have jurisdiction over your kitchen. So.
Well, if I were giving food every month to a food bank, they might.
They might.
Now, that may seem like a ridiculous example, but it illustrates the point here that this is a far-reaching, unprecedented prosecution by the government under the Food and Drug Acts. The government made two strategic concessions or tactical decisions at trial that I would like to remind the court of. First, they said that these offenses, counts 3, 4, and 5, is what LeGrue is charged with, were not specific intent offenses. And they said that in their motions in limine, in the instruction conference at 1269. They said it in their argument to the jury. They said it in their rebuttal argument to the jury. They say it in their brief to this court, pages 17 and 20. These are not specific intent offenses. The second tactical concession the government made, and they claim that all they have to show is that the defendant knew some food was adulterated. But however, if you look at the elements instruction that the government offered, the elements instruction does not even require that. If you look at our appendix, the elements instruction for counts 3 and 4, it's at A3334 of our appendix. First element, the government has to prove that LeGrue knowingly did an act that had the effect of causing any poultry products to become adulterated. And by the way, the statute includes the language, knowingly did an act which was intended to cause or had the effect of causing. So the government has eliminated the clause dealing with intention under that statute. Knowingly did an act that had the effect of causing any poultry products to become adulterated. That is an Arthur Anderson problem. That's exactly the situation in Arthur Anderson. Because a knowing act that had the effect of causing adulteration could be an entirely innocent act. Opening a window, bringing food in and out of the warehouse. As we say in our brief, the city of Chicago knowingly did an act closing the junkyard next door that the evidence showed had the effect of causing any poultry products to become adulterated. And I'm not needlessly parsing the English language here. This is Arthur Anderson. Arthur Anderson, the defendant, was convicted of knowingly impeding an investigation. And the Supreme Court, less than 8 months ago, said, no, the statute has to be construed, and the instruction should have been given that it was knowingly, corruptly impeding. Because merely knowingly impeding an investigation can be a perfectly legitimate act. You can counsel somebody to take the Fifth and so forth.
So now, with respect to some of this other evidence the government has, as it points to in 99 when this rat infestation problem began to develop, and looking at the evidence favorable to your client, there were efforts made to, I guess, clean up the warehouse, but apparently the government also introduced evidence indicating that your client tried to conceal the infestation problem and lied to certain customers about the extent of the problem. How do you handle that evidence that they presented at trial?
Okay, I have two answers to that. First of all, that evidence was introduced primarily on counts 1 and 2 that the GRU was not charged with. Counts 1 and 2 charged an individual and two others, three individuals with conspiracy and with mail fraud. Specific intent, the acts of mail fraud, the overt acts of the conspiracy dealt with alleged false statements being made. LeGru was not charged with counts 1 and 2. LeGru was only charged with the three Food and Drug Act counts.
But that evidence, when it came in, was that evidence just limited to those counts? Did the court give an instruction saying this evidence can only go to these specific individuals, or was it admitted broadly?
The court did not give such an instruction. Frankly, that evidence would be irrelevant to counts 3 and 4 under the government elements instruction. Knowingly did an act that had the effect of causing adulteration. The other elements, capable of use as human food, that was never in dispute. Food being held for sale after commerce, that was never in dispute. And the last element of counts 3 and 4, defendant's conduct involved either intent to defraud or distribution of food products. The government took intent to defraud out of the case. They represented to the judge, they represented the jury. This is not an intent to defraud case. They should have redacted it from the jury instruction, I suppose, but they didn't. So the fourth element is just distribution of such food products, which really wasn't disputed either. So the evidence of the alleged false statements could not have been relevant to counts 3 and 4 by the plain terms of the elements instruction that the government submitted. It could only have been introduced on counts 1 and 2. Count 5 is a little different. Count 5 has the same language, knowingly did any act that had the effect of causing any food products to become adulterated. Food capable of use as human food, being held for sale after commerce. Last element, intent to defraud or mislead. Again, the government took the intent to defraud element off the table. The only thing they have left is something called misleading. And indeed, if you look at the indictment at A35, the indictment says intent to defraud or mislead or distribution or attempted distribution. So the government's element instruction on count 5 did not even track the language of their own indictment. But more than that, the government has represented to the court below and to this court that none of these three counts are specific intent crimes. So I don't know what mislead means. It can't be a specific intent crime if you believe the government's solemn representations to the Judge Leinenweber and to the jury and to this court in the brief. If indeed mislead suggests some specific intent, and it is a specific intent crime, then the GRU instruction 18 should have been given, because the reason it wasn't given because the government said none of these counts are specific intent crimes. So they can't have it either way. If they're going to say that mislead is an element on count 5, and it would only be on count 5, then it was error not to give LeGru instruction 18, which we think would have clarified things, because the government objected to it on that ground, that it was not a specific intent offense. They can't have it both ways. So we offered LeGrue Instruction 18, which we think would have solved the problems of vagueness and the problems of mens rea. The government now concedes there has to be some mens rea. The government says the mens rea consists of knowing that there was bad, adulterated food on the premises. But again, if you look at the elements instruction does not say that. LeGrue Instruction 18, we think, would have cured the problems. It's a simple instruction. It says the crimes charged in counts 3, 4, and 5 require proof of intent before the defendant can be convicted. To establish intent, the government must prove that the defendant knowingly did an act which the law forbids. And that is Staples, and that is Arthur Anderson. It would have solved all the problems with this vagueness that I talked about.
Let me just ask you one question. If the instruction had been given as you proposed it, doesn't that instruction become relevant if it is a specific intent crime? I mean, you know, it's been the government's position it's not a specific intent crime. I followed your argument on that. But if that extra language you wanted in there was included, wouldn't that add a requirement of a specific intent? I mean, wouldn't the impact be that it becomes a specific intent crime with that language that you wanted added?
I don't think so.
That the law forbids.
We could argue that general intent versus specific intent. This court says and the government says that we should just talk about mens rea for the particular offense. No, I think knowingly did an act which the law forbids is not specific intent. It simply says that we have to have some notice before we're charged with a felony. And that's what Arthur Anderson says, and that's what Staples says. So I wouldn't characterize LeGrue 18 as a specific intent instruction. Although if the government's going to say now, contrary to everything they've said, that because the word mislead is in count 5, mislead is a specific intent, count 5 is a specific intent offense, then their objection to LeGrue 18 was ill-founded. I would like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal, and as to the sentencing issues, we'll rest on our brief. Whatever the court does, I would hope you would take note and memorialize the government's confession of error on the Booker issue. Mm-hmm. I think that would provide guidance to judges and litigants in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Coulson. We'll hear now from Ms. Crawford.
May it please the court. My name is Angela Crawford, and I represent the United States in this matter. Let me address first the strict liability jury instruction issue. This was not a strict liability case. The government did not charge this case as a strict liability case. The jury instructions were not strict liability jury instructions, and at no point did the government ever argue this case as a strict liability case. Instead, what the government charged is that the defendant knowingly did an act, and that specific act was to store food, the food products, the meat products, and the poultry products under insanitary conditions. And the jury instructions reflected that. The defendant makes much of the variance, to the extent they call it a variance, between the indictment and the jury instructions. As an initial matter, the jury obviously had the indictment during the deliberations, and the jury instructions properly instructed the jury about each of the elements of each of the charges. To pick up on one of the points that Your Honor raised, the evidence that was presented at trial was overwhelming, and that evidence went to every single count of the indictment. The counts of the indictments, 1 and 2, that went specifically to the individual defendant, Jack Stewart, and the counts of the indictment that went specifically to LeGrue, counts 3, 4, and 5. And the evidence that's spelled out in detail in the government's brief, the rat droppings, the rodent infestation, the insanitary conditions, the buildup, the flaking paint, the mold, all of those facts and all of that evidence went to every single count of the indictment. So it's completely disingenuous at this point for the defendant to claim that somehow that evidence that was presented to the jury does not apply to the defendant, LeGrue. Going next to...
Can you address this argument Mr. Coulson made concerning the notice requirement and how important that notice requirement is to a felony charge?
Well, the issue with the felony under the food, the felony charge under the Food and Drug Act is not a matter of notice. The government does not have to send a series of letters to a defendant company and say, this is what you're violating at every single point or every single year. As the government states in its brief and as was presented at trial, it is the responsibility of the warehouse, it's responsibility of the company to ensure that they're complying with the regulations under the Meat, Poultry, and Food Act. Now, there really is no issue that the defendant didn't know what was going on in its warehouse. The defendant had a pest control company that came into the warehouse. The defendant was receiving information from its customers about road-gnawed food that made its way out of the warehouse to the customers' warehouses. And the defendant had information from its own employees about the conditions and the unsanitary conditions and the rodent infestation that was plaguing that particular warehouse. So the defendant obviously was on notice of the conditions, of the unsanitary conditions, and the improper storage that it was of this food, meat, and poultry product that it was maintaining over a several-year period from roughly 1998, 1999 to 2002 when the USDA went in to inspect, again, the warehouse. Going back to the issue with the restitution and the fine, again, the government, as it states clearly in its brief, concedes the fact that the fine that was imposed on count three should have been limited to a $500,000 maximum under Apprendi. Going to the restitution issue, the restitution amount was proper. It is absurd to claim that in this situation there's something improper about destroying all of the food or attempting to recondition all of the food that was maintained under these type of insanitary and deplorable conditions over a several-year period. The best analogy that I can think of is if I open my refrigerator and I see a rat sitting next to a piece of road-gnawed meat, I'm not going to just get rid of the rat and get rid of the piece of road-gnawed meat and decide that I'm going to serve everything else in that refrigerator to my house guest. What the government did in this situation with LeGrue to either, and that is to destroy all the food and recondition the food that could be reconditioned, was an appropriate response to the conditions that LeGrue allowed to exist, knew that existed in its warehouse over a three-year period. And if the court at this point has no further questions, the government would request that the conviction of LeGrue be affirmed, that the sentence on counts three and four be affirmed, and the sentence on count five be remanded with instructions to impose a sentence of $500,000 on count five.
Thank you, Ms. Crawford.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes, sir.
Arthur Anderson, LLP, versus United States, decided less than 8 months ago, is instructive. And what the Supreme Court said, we have traditionally exercised restraint in assessing the reach of a criminal statute out of concern that a fair warning should be given to the world in language that the common world will understand of what the law intends to do if a certain line is passed. Now, merely having a rat problem at a warehouse does not put LeGrue on notice that they're all of a sudden going to be charged and convicted with felonies. Where is the fair warning, and what is the certain line that Arthur Anderson requires LeGrue and every defendant have? The evidence is overwhelming, she says, that LeGrue knew there was bad food on the premises. The instructions, counts 3, 4, and 5, the elements instructions, do not anywhere say that LeGrue has to know that there's bad food on the premises. It should have been an element, perhaps, but it wasn't. It's not harmless. The evidence is hardly overwhelming that LeGrue had notice and awareness of this certain line which is required for felony acts. And it's curious that every other prosecution under the Food and Drug Acts, mens rea is not an issue because every other prosecution involves a warehouse or food that is red-tagged by the government. That is, this is bad, don't sell it, the defendant sells it anyway. That's a felony prosecution under the Food and Drug Acts. This case is unprecedented. There's no fair warning. The government, I submit, does not need this conviction to enforce the Food and Drug Acts. I think it sets a very dangerous precedent, a very slippery slope for felony criminal liability in the absence of a better showing of mens rea and notice and instructions that made sense. For all the reasons I've stated, I'm asking this court to reverse LeGru's conviction on counts 3, 4, and 5. And if there are no further questions, I will conclude.
I don't think so. Thank you, Mr. Coulson. Our thanks to all counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.